Okay,
All
so
right.
we've already been talking a bit, mostly about harangue.
What? And no, I've said nothing about harangue.
You've said nothing about harangue, okay.
Well, I've said nothing about harangue.
So I'll just recap a bit. The reason I'm asked you for an interview is because I'm trying to find out about the origins of the modern contemporary blues dance. And there's lots of contradictory information, and I've been misled by some of it, I think. So I want to find out what the truth is.
So, what contradictory information do you feel like you've heard besides what you talked about in your blog from the slow dance track?
This is I've already interviewed Peter Loggins and Chester Whitmore.
Okay.
Neither of them is a blues dancer, but they certainly recognize that blues
Yeah, but
dance.
Peter is fairly well versed in, Peter knows a whole lot of dances.
He certainly does, yeah.
Yeah.
And as does Chester, actually.
Yeah, I have
They're both
an
great
interview
in their
with Chester
research.
going off on all sorts of different dances.
They both, well, Peter was very happy to recognize that blues dance was a thing, and he traced its origin to, I think he said, Chicago in about 2005 or something.
No.
But yeah, I thought that was wrong as well, but
I mean, he's not in the scene, so. And it's not his history that he's, but I mean, like, absolutely, there was a Friday Night Blues opened in 2004, I think. I mean, like, so we had a weekly venue before his supposed creation of the blues scene. But whatever, I mean, I don't expect Peter Loggins is not an every single dance historian. Peter Loggins knows everything about the jazz dances. We don't
And
expect him
he
to
would be
know
the first
about.
to agree with that, I'm
Yeah,
sure.
I don't think
Yeah.
he would fight me on that. I mean, the contemporary scene, as people who were around at the time will tell you, in the end of the 90s, it really started at Lindy Exchanges turning into house parties and turning into events and like actual more formalized events. I really feel like, I think I discussed this in my article on my site, there are like three phases that the blues scene went through, which is the being part of another dance. Tacked on kind of late night Lindy Exchange, and then being like its own kind of informal event, which is the house party, and then being a formal event. And that had already happened by sorry, my phone is telling me all sorts of things. That had already happened by 2005, definitely.
Peter Loggins mentioned that the word Lindy Groove was used for a while.
No.
No?
Lindy Booty.
Lindy Booty, okay.
Lindy Groove was, he. I think he just misspoke,
Okay.
because you know Lindy Groove is the a venue in L.A.
Okay.
that's modeled after the San Francisco Lindy scene, and is the most successful one in L.A. but no, Lindy Groove is well, he likes to use groove to talk about kind of the way we dance in a lot of ways. But Lindy Groove, I mean, maybe he means that in lots of ways, but Lindy Groove is the name of a venue in
Okay.
L.A. that's been around for a while.
So you
Lindy
Lindy
Booty,
Booty
and I
was.
don't know if he knows about Lindy Booty, but Lindy Booty was like the beginnings of the house party scene in the West Coast. Somebody told me that there was also Jeff Benoit's parties up in the Northeast, up in Canada. But I actually know not enough about that.
Okay.
So.
And then but and that's on the line that led to what we call blues dance now.
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
like Lindy Booty was the beginning of the house parties. And then Lindy Booty, actually, the biggest, the huge Lindy Booty that happened in, I should know this, it was at my house, in 2000, whatever, I could look it up. The really big Lindy Booty we had that was called Booty Call, was like a 3-day long house party, ended up having workshops and classes at it, and which were run by Mihai. And then Mihai was quite successful with that, whereas like Lindy Booty just made money, or would only make money by mistake. Like Lindy Booty was basically, it was like
Non-profit.
a, we'd spend $2,000 to $3,000 throwing a house party, and we'd take donations, and we'd bring in $2,000 to $3,000. So, but he actually ran these classes, and he took in money for that, and was successful. And I guess that inspired him to go ahead and start kind of running a practica, which became well, Friday Blues Practica, which became exploded and became Friday Blues, which was the first weekly venue of the current scene, and it's still ongoing.
And what year was that again?
Can look it up. Let me look it up if
Well, approximate will do.
I mean
Okay.
it was like that was in like the So 90, the end of the 90s was when the Lynn Exchange started having slower dance music, right? Mm-hmm. And then the first Lynnie Booty was in 2002, is that right? Oh, I don't have everything hooked up. I mean, I'd have to look up on it. Okay. I don't remember when we threw the first Lynnie Booty, and I don't remember
but
when
it's, we threw. But I could look that up.
You can look all that
okay.
up.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, if you look up, like, on LinnyBooty.com, it has a list of the parties, and Booty Call was the three-day-long one. That was what was the inspiration then for Mihai to go off and start Friday Night Blues. And I, you know, I mean, Mihai is a controversial character, but I give him a huge amount of credit. He completely changed, you know. He did something that the rest of us were not doing, which was to kind of turn into something that'd be inclusive, which I think is great. I'm kind of surprised, because I am almost always strictly inclusive on the kind of things I do. Like, I always, like, Lynnie Booty was strictly, was very strictly had to be openly publicized. And my friends all told me, you know, it had to be secret. And you had to have, like, that was part of the PR campaign, was that you made it secret and you told everybody word of mouth. And I was like, no, absolutely not. In fact, one of them was actually on LynnieExchange.com, which was the dance calendar at the mm-hmm. time. Because to me, I was like, everybody should know about it because we allow mm-hmm. everyone to come to this. But we weren't making it inclusive in the sense of, like, and we'll teach you if you don't know how to do it. Mm. And that's the step Mihai took. And that
I was, see, yeah.
And he also formalized it by making it a regular thing in a mm-hmm. regular place. And that's when, like, that's why the San Francisco scene became kind of the, at least back then, was the World Center Blues. That might be debatable now, but it's certainly one of the strongest places in the world to blues dance.
So your website, if I've understood correctly, is
each one?
Bluesdance.com. Bluesdance.com.
Yeah.
The one that you well, announced at the end of your lesson. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has a thing about the history of blues.
Yeah.
And it fairly clearly says it's a new dance. On there.
Actually, okay. So, I think what it says, unless I typed it wrong. I mean, like, the way I look at it is. Mm-hmm. This dance came out of Lindy Hopping. And,
okay, so... That's actually true.
It evolved out of Lindy Hoppers. I mean, actually, initially, it was kind of funny. When they first started playing blues, I mean, you see triple steps and crap like that. And that stuff doesn't make sense. So what happens is people keep doing that stuff, and it just mm-hmm. doesn't make sense. So it starts falling out of the dance. The rock steps start falling away, and people start, like, doing things that start making more sense. Mm-hmm. And little by little, these Lindy Hoppers took, like, the kind of dance and movement that they knew, and it started merging into something. We all ended up agreeing on the same kind of basic thing, which is this, you know, this pulsing kind of... I just taught the class, right?
Yep.
That's, to me, is the foundations of blues. And mm-hmm. And there are different types of blues dances, but, like, that is the dance that most people are doing.
Okay.
So that dance, it turns out, as I said in the article, there were some people around that time, like around the same time that that Booty Call happened and created Friday Night Blues, around the same time there were people who were working on kind of the vintage, trying to learn more about the vintage okay. side of the dance.
Could I just pause there? Because I know what you're talking about because I've just been to your class, but maybe...
Right.
Maybe if somebody else hears this, they wouldn't know. So could you spend a couple of minutes describing that dance that you just taught?
Yeah, come take my class. Give me money. No.
I
talk about it in one of my other articles, but to me it's like it's the athletic posture doing the pulsing change to the blues beat, which I also talk about in one of my articles, that there's this, the blues music should have, to some extent, has a boom, chick, boom, on the one and the three, and we pulse and then change on that as a basic step. And the basic posture that I teach, because this is the one you're going to see in most places, is kind of a parallel offset posture mm-hmm. like you would have in the middle of a swing out. Mm-hmm. But there are other postures that can make sense, and there are other postures from other dances, and that's great. But like if you travel around the world, the one that most people are doing is this posture. And I think it has a lot to do with because it opens up the most possibility. And it's just also the one that people have kind of chosen to focus on.
You called it a half-open hold.
Because, I mean, to me, open-closed or half-open, half-closed, I sometimes actually call that the ajar position.
Ajar position.
All of those are possible mm-hmm. in the same posture. That's all one mm-hmm. thing that I teach. So the distance is not part of what I teach. It's the fact that you're in kind of an athletic posture, the forward, like, attack posture. Or the
parallel
athletic, that you're parallel offset, and that you're, you know, you're actually, and you're drop, the pulse is down into the floor, and that there's, you know, I mean, there's the contraction in the slight contraction in the chest. There's a lot of things that happen, but like, I think like if you look at the different people who are doing blues dances today, you're going to see them all kind of doing the same thing. What was interesting is that, like, as I said, so like Friday Night Blues was starting to kind of form, and yeah, blues and Lenny Booty had been around, and around that time, there was a group of dancers who were like kind of trying to discover the vintage roots of blues dancing, and they were doing some research because there's unfortunately not a lot of video footage, if really any reasonable video footage, just because nobody was like whipping their iPhones out at the, you know, at the tavern when people were playing blues.
What vintage are we talking?
I mean, like in like if you're talking in the teens, right? When blues music first came out, or even in the '20s, right? People would go, you know, maybe they'd be dancing in a bar somewhere. And nobody had, no film crew was showing up for that. Mm-hmm. And nobody had cameras. Mm-hmm. There were no personal video cameras at the time. So we really don't have much more than like what historians who were interested in kind of the whole spectrum of African-American dances, who managed to talk to some of the people who did this at the time, have told us. And a lot of that is in book form.
So what do we know about the dance then? Was it a partner dance, for example?
Right. So as we were talking, I think we were talking off record.
Okay.
About this, right? I'm trying to remember. We didn't talk about
that. I don't think we've got that on here.
Okay. So, one of the things that we've discovered, let me just put it this way. One of the things we've discovered is, there was a fight for a while, which was kind of silly. And that, I mean, we could talk about that, but I don't think it's worth talking about any more than it's worth talking about, like, the Savoy versus the Dean Collins versus the Hollywood style wars that went on, like, in the 90s about Lindy Hop, right?
Okay. Sometimes fights explain things.
Right. But we'll talk about it later. I'm just saying it's not that consequential. Those, in this case, those fights, in my opinion, were politically motivated.
Okay.
And they were about power and who had, and trying to control who could teach and who couldn't teach.
Okay.
And they were somewhat trying to be protective of the dance, but they were doing, I mean, so some, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, the point is that if you looked at the dance, at the, so there were these people who were saying they were going back and looking at the vintage roots of the blues and doing the vintage roots of blues. And then you had these people who were doing it at the house parties who were like Lindy Hoppers, just kind of converging on a dance. And if you looked, and they started coming together because the people from the house parties started going to these events. And it turned out it was the same dance. We were doing the same dance that they were. Okay? That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But having said that, there are some differences. I mean, there's a couple caveats. And one is that, number one, how much you believe, as far as how much research they did, maybe you might feel that you might agree with Harang's feelings on some of that about how much research they were doing at the time. But a lot of research has been done since then.
Right, so
maybe, and another difference that I also mentioned, one very distinct difference between blues 100 years ago and blues now is that blues now is a social dance. So it's something that you can comfortably do with people you've just met, and you go to a social event and you'll blues dance with many people. And 100 years ago, usually blues dance, first of all, well, there are two big differences. One is that it was very much a couples dance. So things like grinding and whatnot were far more acceptable. And we actually, I mean, we don't talk about this in foundations classes because it's too much information for the students. But I mean, the reality is, like, what we're teaching now is the safe social version of it, right? Because if you had grinding in it, then people would only be able to do it with, you know, the people they're close to.
You wouldn't do that in class.
Yeah, I mean, and blues wasn't really taught back then. People didn't have classes where they'd show up, and it wasn't like a blues venue somewhere. Like in a sense, now we have like things like Friday Night Blues or Wade's. We have these blues venues, and you go there to hear recorded blues music just for the purpose of blues dancing. Whereas, like, you know, at the time, it would be a bar. You'd go there, you'd drink, and you'd bring your woman or your man, and you'd, like, grind up against each other to the music. And so the rhythms that you knew and the things you'd learned from various types of dancing would get thrown in there. So, like, the dance was far more sexual 100 years ago than it is now. And the other difference is that the dance was regional in such a huge way. In fact, regional isn't even the right word. Like, the dance was so sectioned off by each area had its own variation on it, right? Mm-hmm. So there, because no one was spreading it, no one was traveling around teaching it, people weren't going to different events, there was no Harvest Moon of Blues. What that meant was, you know, you could go into one bar and they'd have their take on it, and go to another bar and they'd have their take on it. But all of that came out of the culture that was like the African-American dancing at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, not that surprising that what they came up with is not that different than what we would come up with, kind of almost working backwards from the product of what is blues and ragtime. And
so jazz. Basically, you get a few basic concepts and you get that particular kind of music and you're going to end up with something similar to this. That's the claim.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have an even stronger claim than that, which something I believe, but I totally am comfortable with people having trouble swallowing this. Mm-hmm. But like one theory I like to tell people is that I feel like if you took tango dancing and you erased it completely from society, like you erased everybody's tango dancing from everyone's mind and erased all the DVDs and all the written descriptions, if you kind of just obliterated it from our culture but kept the music, that eventually people would start dancing to tango music and eventually they would completely recreate what I believe is pretty much the same exact dance. I believe they'd do the same posture. They'd be doing the same footwork. I believe all of that comes out of the genre of music. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at, like, if you stop, like, I travel around, I teach these weekend workshops on blues dancing. And if you stop me at any point during any one of my classes and say, why is this happening? Why do you do this move? Then it will come back to one of three things. It's either going to be the music, our bodies, or physics, mm-hmm. right? But it's going to be, like, I guess, biology, physics, or music. When you take those three things together, then you do these things. The only thing, and I think I actually mentioned in class today, the one thing that doesn't fit is the fact that we do the ballroom stance. Mm-hmm. That if you look at the ergonomics of like a lead and a follow being offset and parallel and using one arm around the back, there are four possible combinations, mm-hmm. right? You could be like offset on the left with your right arm, offset on the right with your right arm, offset on the left with the left arm, and offset, you know. So of those four combinations, two of them make sense ergonomically. We're doing one of the ones that doesn't really make sense ergonomically, and that's...
Oh, really?
Well, think about it. We have our right arm looped around their back, but yeah. we're offset to the left, so we have to like really reach around. If we took a step and we offset to the right, mm-hmm. we'd have so much more room and space with our arms
that's
to do
fascinating.
Things.
Have you ever tried dancing like that?
Yeah, it's really weird. It takes a while to get used to. I think everybody should. I think you should try all of the above. I think it's like learning how to do reverse swing outs and things like that. It's actually good for you. But that is the one thing that out of everything like that, at least that I teach, doesn't come down to those three components.
And so that's natural history.
That's a cultural history. And so, of course...
And that's so basic that it's got all the way into Lindy Hop and back out again.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the Lindy Hop does that because blues and ballroom... I mean ballroom as in actual ballroom. Like, I mean, as I said, we were talking about this before.
International standard.
In history, yeah, ballroom dancing, ballrooming apostrophe is a ridiculous thing that I'm not going to talk about right now. Ballroom and blues is a fictional thing.
Okay, I don't know about that. But that's good because it's fictional.
Move on. It's fictional. It's not a real thing. Yeah, if you look at the history, if we're talking not contemporary history, but vintage blues history, if you look at, like, where that comes from, it's because you took, you had basically slaves or ex-slaves, right? You'd like this African-American poor population, which was very rooted in like their culture, which had been kind of put like glued into American musical and dance culture. Because like a lot of times when the slaves came over, they weren't allowed to do their own kind of religious ceremonies and things like that, right? But to them, dance was part of religion. So they would like use dance as a way to still cherish their culture, but they'd also sometimes like suck in parts of American culture.
I forgot to offer a beer earlier.
Oh, in part because it was present, and in part sometimes because they were mocking it, right? And also in part because like that was how they would kind of mask the fact that they were still observing their own culture yep. without being too kind of African and getting in trouble for it. But I mean, if you look at like a lot of the dances that came out of that, like cakewalk, like the cakewalk, for example, which is one of the precursors to Charleston and Lindy Hop, comes from the fact that either slaves or ex-slaves were dancing and they were making fun of the white owners in a way that the white owners were enjoying it, thinking, oh, isn't this funny? They're like doing it, but they were actually making fun. So like both sides were like making fun of the other side and kind of ignoring the fact that they were being, I don't know. It's
And that's why you're focusing on the teens as a dancer.
Oh, so I guess my point is that's where the ballroom posture of having our right arm around the back comes from. It's the fact that, you know, they would like learn to, that was the posture. Like if you've ever, like, I mean, when you're a kid and you're like, oh, now I'm a fancy ballroom dancer, you're like, boom, you get into that posture. Like that's one of the elements that they took out of like the white culture mm-hmm. and mixed in with their black culture, and that's why Lindy Hop has it, that's why blues dancing has it, and that's why when, like you said, when we kind of started dancing to blues music again, we kind of wrapped back around.
Mm-hmm. There have been slow dances in all decades between then and now, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes, like, I'll tell people that, like, blues dance pretty much completely died, which is only partially true. But I mean, it died in the sense that it wasn't like an active social scene. Mm-hmm. Lindy Hop never died. It was almost dead. But like, you know, I mean, people were still Lindy Hopping, you know, before the scene kind of resurrected in mm-hmm. the '80s. I mean, like Sylvia Sykes was doing Lindy Hop. I mean, there were people who were doing Lindy Hop in the '70s and the, you know, you can look that up. But generally there was no social blues dancing scene. There were some semblance of blues dancing, you know, 30, 40, 50 years mm-hmm. ago. Like there are, for example, our black fraternities that do, and I actually don't know why we don't connect more with them as a scene. I've thought a lot about that. I think it'd be interesting. They do a version of blues dancing, like, I think it might be a slow drag that they've been doing for decades. Mm-hmm.
Black fraternities, I don't know what that means.
Oh, sorry. Fraternities in the United States are, you know, the brotherhood organizations, usually like Greek lettered organizations, like Alpha Kappa Phi. If you've watched enough American movies, sooner or later you'll see one in college. Usually the fraternities and sororities are like the collection oftentimes of the drunken fools, but there are all sorts of fraternities and sororities. There are fraternities for like, I mean, there are intellectual fraternities, and then there are black fraternities, which are basically, they're more in the South, but like in the South where it's all black people in a certain college who are in a house together.
All right. So
they have dances that are...
just to be clear, is it always within a university?
Yeah, fraternity is a university housing organization, basically. It's like a brotherhood housing...
Okay, so they have dances, and these dances are passed on among the students, is that right?
Yeah, well, but, and I'm ashamed that I can't remember offhand which type of blues dance it is. I don't think it's not slow drag. Maybe it is.
Okay.
They have a specific, because there are variations on the blues dance, and there's one that they do at these fraternities as a social dance mixer, you know, mm-hmm. every once in a while. And it has been passed down through the fraternities. And amazingly, we haven't kind of connected with that scene, which mm-hmm. is negligent on our part. But I mean, also what they're going to be doing is going to be a modified thing that's, you know, changed through the decades.
As yeah, well. I mean, if it's really
contemporary as well, right? I mean,
if it's really being passed down through the universities, then the oral history only goes back 4 years or something, right? Because all the students leave every 4 years.
Well, sure, but then they're repeating what they heard. I mean, they're learning. Like I said, yeah, that's in the same way that Lindy Hop done today by people who aren't, like, for example, trying to recreate something they're seeing mm-hmm. in a video, like Hells of Hoppin' or whatever. Lindy Hop done socially today is a contemporary dance, but it's based on a vintage dance.
Yeah.
The connection.
Peter Loggins called it neo swing.
All right. Well, bring Peter Loggins here. We used to have a annual debate at Harang year. Like, so we'd meet each other at breakfast and be like, "All right, it's time for the annual debate," and the rest of the table would just clear out. And it is fun, but I mean, like, that gets into some of that gets into like, it's tricky, like, because I stand on both sides of the terminology wars, right? Because I'm also dealing with, you know, in the blues world in America, there's this offshoot scene now of, I don't know if you want to call it fusion or alt or whatever. Yeah. And it's these people who are kind of intentionally dancing. They say they're dancing blues, and that's maybe questionable, but they're dancing to not blues music, and they're calling it blues. And
there's a
lot of debate over that, and it's exhausting.
In London, they call it blues fusion. I know what you're talking about.
I wish they'd stop using the word blues, but whatever. You know, what are you going to do?
So terminology wars, what are the two?
Well, I mean, in the same sense of, like, Peter Loggins thinks we shouldn't be calling what's happening, like, out of San Francisco at the 920 special, it shouldn't be called Lindy Hop because it has moved on from the original Lindy Hop. And I'm like, you know, we're still doing swing outs.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, like, he's like, yeah, but you got like a groovy kind of a swing out and you're not doing like the Frankie Manning. And I'm like, to me, I my answer to that is, Peter, what year did Lindy Hop stop? Like, at what year? Because, you know, if you look at the Lindy Hop before, say, Twist Mouth George and his partner, who, of course, remains nameless, even though she probably came up with it because she was the woman. But like, Twistmouth George's partner came up with the idea of swiveling instead of doing a rock step. Go back even further. It used to be partner Charleston, right? At some point, somebody decided to start doing triple steps instead of the kicks. So that's when Lindy Hop started. But then all of a sudden, somebody starts doing the fall starts doing a twist, which we consider the basic now. I would argue that's not Lindy Hop, because Lindy Hop was a rock step.
It's a rock step.
I'm being facetious here. So if you type that up, make sure that Dave is being sarcastic. So, you know, I mean, like, Lindy Hop evolved over time back in the 30s. Lindy Hop has continued to evolve.
I think, from what Peter said to me, he understands why it's still called Lindy Hop, and he's happy to go with that. But at the same time, he thinks it's important that we recognize that it's not quite the same dance as it was 20 years ago.
I'll agree with him there.
Yeah. Wow. So 10 years ago, even.
Wow. I think he also has a little bit of a misconception. Well, no, 10 years ago, I mean, like, the...
I'm going to open this.
You go ahead. Oh, please do. Ahead and drink away. Well, we don't want to get into Lindy Hop history. That's okay. A long discussion. Look, blues dance is evolving over time. And one of the things that's going on is there are these debates now as to, like, whether you can blues dance, like, what kind of stuff can you blues dance to? Like, how strict is your definition of blues? For example, for me, like, I am often getting, or I used to get into these arguments all the time with people who were like, they were playing stuff that was literally zero blues content. There was no genre musical connection to blues at all, and they're calling it blues. And to me, I'm like, okay, there's no way to justify that. Otherwise, every single song in the universe is blues. But I mean, even having said that, my definition of blues is looser than other people and stronger than others. You know, it's like, for me, I'm like, well... You know, like, well, in class, I use Midnight Train to Georgia, which is really a soul song, but it has the blues beat. And so when I'm teaching people how to pulse and change, like, it's the perfect tempo, and it's got such a nice, clear, solid blues beat that's not covered up by anything else, that to me, it's a great beginning song.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely,
you know, fun. And it's got the boom chick so beautifully.
Some people define blues in terms of the 12-bar chord sequence, but that 12-bar chord sequence is also used in swing songs, even gypsy jazz and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes sense to take, like, patterns of those macro patterns of the music and make that restrictive, because there's so many different patterns in blues. But like,
I personally would include a lot of the slow jazz that they play here
as blues. See, I mean, like, you and I would have different definitions there. I mean, to me, there's already a genre for that, and it's called jazz. So I don't see why we would also call it blues. To me, you know, I mean, unless it's somehow a mix of the two genres, I would say it fits under jazz.
But just given where dance is,
huh?
Tempo is important.
But also, I mean, how long have you been going to the slow night here at Harang?
I've only been to Harang for the last, this is my fourth year.
Oh, okay. Well, even 4 years ago, I don't know how well you remember, or were you going to the slow dance night?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was much stricter then.
Okay.
Until really late at night, when they were sure, you know, Leonard wasn't going to be in the room. I literally, the very first time I heard Nina Simone, LaRue was DJing. I shouldn't say this. I'm going to get LaRue in trouble. LaRue's DJing, and I went up to her. I had to go up to her after the song. I'm like, you just fucking played Nina Simone. And she's like, I know, Leonard's not in the building. He had found it. Like, it was 4 a.m, but it was still shocking to me. And now you'll hear blues mixed in once in a while. Well, I'll tell you, like, 10 years ago, it was nothing but slow jazz. There was no pulse the entire night.
Peter's drum somehow got permission to play hip-hop the other day in the library.
Yeah, now we're getting into friends of Harang versus what's right. I mean, Harang is in a tricky position because, like, they're supposed to be honoring all African-American dances, and this is one of them that they've kind of overlooked, and the problem is this society has come up and started doing a contemporary version of it. And, I mean, look at, like, Harang 30 years, or not Harang, but the Hot Shots, right? Like, the Hot Shots 30 years ago, they came from this place of historical recreationism. To them, they didn't even know Lindy Hop was a social dance until Frankie came out here and said, it's a social dance as well. To them, it was a performance thing. So, like, the Swedes were all about this historical recreation of these amazing performances that they saw, like, in the various movies. Whereas, you know, the people who were trying to learn how to social dance to it were learning about, like, all these different types of ways to look at connection instead of, like, the exact historical recreation of a dance. So, of course, the Swedes are very concerned with historical recreation, even though now they're fantastic social dancers. They still, like, that's where they were born from. But now you have, like, blues. Nobody did that with blues and can't because there's no real footage of it. And so blues comes along, and all they've got is the side of it that's like the contemporary version of an old dance. And so that's really hard for them. You know, so that's going to be really difficult for them to incorporate, and it kind of snuck up on them. And so the fact that they're like, they're going to do, they'll do African dancing here, they'll do like mambo, but they're like, they won't really include blues, except now they have a slow track, but they can't just come straight out and have like, let's be inclusive to blues, which is a huge part of the history of Lindy Hop, for example.
We do have footage from the intervening decades, so we got films from house parties and things.
Which Red decades? Parties.
I'm not quite sure, but I think it's probably 50s, 60s, 70s.
I think you'll see, and there's some footage from earlier than that, you'll find like recreations of rent parties, like in movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few movies here and there where like, or even just a, not to, maybe a rent party or a, you know, like a bar scene where somebody's singing the bar and you see people dancing there. So, you know, you'll see the Hollywood version of the dance, and we can learn a lot from that, but there's not a lot of clips out there. It is unfair of me to say there's none, but like there's all we have are the Hollywood recreations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost like saying, like, oh, we know what Lindy Hop is now because we can watch Dean Collins.
Mm.
Fantastic dancer.
Yeah.
I love his dancing. And I think
but that's not the whole of
Lindy Hop. But I mean, like, that's not the whole of Lindy Hop. Like, I think what's really amazing is that there were moments when there were cameras that just happened to show the Savoy. Like, I think that's the stuff that's incredible. To really be able to see a whole bunch of people who are just dancing. It's not a routine. It's not choreography. It's just what the dance was. I mean, that's obviously from my perspective as a social dancer.
Yeah.
So,
can we talk about the... I've informally been talking to blues dancers today, mainly young people who are not historians and not expert dancers by any means. And many of them identify lots of different shades of blues dance.
Yeah.
So I've heard terms... You already said you didn't like ballroom blues, if I understood that.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I said okay. It's not a real thing.
Okay. Somebody identified juke as a dance?
Well, juke, that's tricky. I mean, Damon Stone kind of invented this thing called juking and then went around and kind of felt like he copyrighted it. So that's a very bizarre... You'd have to talk to Damon about that.
Okay.
I've always thought juke was a very silly word, personally. I mean, I know that they called it juke joints, but they also called them... They're also bars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, I don't know. Doesn't it sound silly? Juke?
Well, I don't really know. That's why I'm asking you.
It sounds ridiculous. I've always had a problem with that term. Juke, maybe. The juke-in is something that Damon claims is a name he ascribed to a dance. And so, like, there was a war for a little while where other people tried to have juke in classes, and Damon was like, you have no right to use that. I created that term. But Damon is an interesting fellow, so we'll just move on from that.
Trad blues?
Oh, my God, I hate that term.
What does it mean?
Did you read... Are you saying this because you just read my article about this?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, you don't know about this?
This is what somebody told me.
I just wrote an article a few days ago because I keep hearing... Because I'm hearing it now, and I hear that all the time. I hate the term trad blues. I just wrote an article saying I think it's offensive, and I'm not going to... I wish people would... Because I get it all the time. The fusion... What people mean by trad blues is traditional blues.
Yeah.
And I have people all the time say to me that I'm a trad blues dancer. And I'm like... And it's always coming from the context of as opposed to a fusion blues dancer.
Oh, I see.
And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, you could read my article on bluesdance.com. But my basic stance on it is... You don't get to take, like, I'm not a trad blues dancer. I love dancing to contemporary blues music as much as trad blues, and or traditional vintage blues. Trad is a moniker that they invented for this whole...
So you're understanding...
It's a marketing ploy, is what it is. It's not even necessarily intentional, but it's basically a marketing... It's a marketing ploy where...
But your understanding of the term is that it means not fusion. Is that accurate?
Well, not necessarily that it's defined in the sense of being the negative of something else, but it's defined in the sense of it's there's trad blues, which is and fusion blues, and fusion blues is not trad, and trad is not fusion. They're both distinguishing different types of blues,
and I see that
I am of the kind of person who likes to dance to traditional blues, and I'm like, wait, where does contemporary blues fit into this? Because like generally the recordings are better. Like, I'd rather dance to Nina Simone than Billie Holiday.
Okay, so now...
Usually, because Nina Simone has better recordings.
Just then you were talking about styles of music, not styles of dance. Traditional blues.
Right. But to be clear, like, people will use this interchangeably to talk about the dance or the music. People tell me I dance to trad blues and that I am a trad blues dancer. So
people,
if they,
don't, don't distinguish the music and the dance.
Yeah, so they're saying that the music I dance to is trad blues. And I'm like, no, the music I dance to is blues. Mm-hmm. I'll dance to, you know, anything blues that's danceable. Mm-hmm. Like contemporary blues or vintage blues. So calling it traditional blues, all you're doing is trying to make space to sneak in this new type mm-hmm. of blues, which is to say, oh, well, you're a traditional blues dancer, so we're doing this type of blues. I'm like, no, I dance to blues. Like, you can try to call your stuff blues, even though it doesn't actually come out of the genre of blues, which I don't even have to define because they're musicologists who define it for mm-hmm. me. But you don't get to, like, try to take my... You don't get to take this... It'd be like saying, oh, you're a swing dancer, and I come up and say, oh, I'm dancing to salsa music, and I'm doing swing dancing, so I'm dancing to super new Latin swing, and you're a trad swing dancer. And you're like, no, okay, you can go do your thing, but I'm a swing dancer. I'm not a trad swing dancer. Mm-hmm. I'm a swing dancer. So I find that really aggravated. And the problem I find aggravating is that people have kind of accepted it because I think people are like, yeah, we don't want to be confused with fusion blues dancers. I'm like, okay, well, you know, first of all, don't accept this false kind of naming mm-hmm. that lets only adds to the confusion. Mm-hmm. I don't like the naming fusion blues because it creates confusion, right? If you want to call it fusion, then fine. Or alt, because it has some weird usage, fine. But if you're calling it alt blues, implying it's alternative blues, that's actually false. Mm. The music is not alt blues.
Mm. Ugh.
Yeah. I'm a blues dancer. You can't, like, if you were selling, this is what I say in the article, like, if you were selling your car, you wouldn't be like, oh, is that a rolling car? All cars roll. Like, oh, is that an engined car or not? It's a car. There's no...
Okay. I just want to summarize what I've understood so far. You said that the blues that was around in 2005-ish evolved out of Lindy Hop, but actually it was convergent evolution and we recreated something very close to a historical dance.
Well, I mean, I think you can see that just by the fact that, like, I mean, I could show you videos of dancing at the time, right? But you can see that from... the fact that the people were doing this dance, which you can now read about in historical books. Mm. And I'm not saying it was all good. Like, and I'm not saying it happened immediately. Like, if you look at the very first Lindy Booty, you're going to see a whole bunch of things going on. It was like something that happened over time as Lindy Booty went on. Like, people started to converge on this one dance. Mm-hmm. When I personally started dancing was either in 98 or 2001, depending on how you count it, blues. Mm-hmm. Everybody was kind of doing their own thing. And, like, everybody had their own pieces. There was a lot of, like, you know... there's all sorts of experimentation going on, which had in it, usually every once in a while, there'd be some pulses and changes. And what happened is, like I said, the stuff that didn't make sense kept falling away.
Yep.
Some things took a long time. It took fucking forever to get rid of body rolls. I'm so glad I don't see them much anymore. I can't stand body rolls. I suppose there are certain moments in certain songs where maybe they make sense, but...
But this process happened without any historical research, basically.
Well, no, it happened without historical research and with historical research. Because at the same time, like I said, there were people who were doing this. Some of the historical research, you can talk to them about that and figure out on your own how much of that.
Would you be prepared to mention some names?
No way.
No, okay. And
I'm already in enough trouble with everything I've said in this interview.
Are there any other influences on it? I mean... I will say this.
There are people who did some historical research, and it's great. And they have definitely opened the way for people to really kind of learn about the roots. And they were they themselves had great information. Some of them thought they had more information than they had and have made some outrageous claims that do not get backed up by when you actually discuss with them. So I'd say when somebody starts telling... I mean, so that's where maybe there's a slight amount of truth to what Harang was saying, or the teachers were saying about, you know, there are some contemporary dancers who are like, what was it they said? That are like, who claim to be doing a vintage dance for self-promotion. I think there's definitely some self-promotion going on in some of that, but that doesn't mean that the dance doesn't have some validity.
I think it might be wrong to ascribe that statement to Harang, actually. I think that might
be my
misunderstanding.
Oh, if you got that impression from some of the teachers, maybe it comes out of the fact that there maybe were some of the people who definitely did a lot of self-promotion based on claims. So if anybody comes to you and says, I know a lot about vintage blues, some of them do, some of them don't, I would say push. go ahead and be like, oh, tell me about it. I'm like, oh, I just know a lot about it. Like, mm-hmm. there are this many dances. Okay, what are they? Mm-hmm. Well, tell me more. Like, if you just start pushing and you can only get a shallow, I mean, like, anybody can read, you know, any of the blues books, and that doesn't make you a blues historian. There, and I think you should, actually, if you want to know. I can get you a list of them if you want. There's, you know, Juke and the Blues, and there's the, what's her name? The Catherine Gizzard book. I mean, there's a list of books where people who are interested in dance did the research mm-hmm. to find out what these dances were. So, I mean,
I'm not clear what statement you're making here. Sorry.
What I'm saying is that some people purport to there are some. I'm not. Let's let it go.
Okay.
There might be some people who, I would say, if you're ever talking to someone, they're claiming to be a blues historian, just feel free to push them on the knowledge. They should be able to talk endlessly about it. So yeah. If they can't, then maybe you're talking to someone who read a couple books and calls themselves a blues historian. I'm a vintage blues historian. I read some books.
Let's talk about where some of the things in blues dance came from. So, Close Hold with a Chess Connection.
Yeah.
It's not in Lindy Hop, as I understand it. Or very little.
Maybe you'd say that this is because I'm a blues dancer as well, but I do it all the time in Lindy Hop. Mm-hmm.
You do
see... Well, okay, here. There's the... you could even do it in... I'm so bad with names of moves. When you come together and do the Charleston between each other's legs, you'll have a closed chess position. I mean, and then look at Balboa.
Jig walks, yeah.
Thank you, jig walks.
But it's still an outward connection, right?
You can do jig walks outwards, but you can also do jig walks connected. I mean, and look at Balboa.
Balboa, right.
Right? That's a swing dance.
Yeah, but it's not Lindy Hop.
Sure.
So, you say Balboa has influenced blues?
No.
So, how did it get into blues then?
Because that's a great example, because it kind of comes back to my point before, right? We were dancing in close position, like in the very beginning, because the song asks for it. And sure enough, 100 years ago, they were definitely dancing in close position.
So that's
probably closer position than we. Well, not probably. They were definitely dancing in even closer position than we are now.
So you'd put that down as a reinvention, would you?
I don't know if reinvention is the right word, but I think you're saying what. I mean, I would put a rediscovery.
Rediscovery.
I don't think dance genres are invented. I think they're discovered out of the music.
I'm happy to go with that.
That's a great quote. To kill the whole interview and just write that down. That's what I said tonight. The rest of it's just going to get me in trouble.
So the dances are out there. You just
dances
discover
are
them.
Discovered. They're not invented.
Interesting.
I feel very strongly about that.
In your lesson, you were very clear that the pulse was a downward pulse. A lot of the blues I see.
There are some songs where you'll have an upward pulse, but it's a foundations class.
Okay. So where is that upward? Again, that upward pulse is not in Lindy Hop. So where might that come from?
Well, but then it gets tricky, right? Because there's ways to do upward pulses that are still grounded, and then there are ways to do upward pulses that are kind of either airy or kind of releasing from the ground, and that's hard to show in an audio interview. Mm-hmm. But like, even if you're doing an upward pulse in a blues, I mean, like, it's still the same kind of motion down. You might have the accent at the top of the pulse, but you're not, for example, generally straightening your legs all the way, except mm-hmm. as maybe a styling thing in a moment of like stretch or balance. But like, you're still going to be, your body posture is still heading downwards, even if the pulse is upwards. But that depends a lot on the song. Mm-hmm. And some songs will go both ways as well. But like, for the foundations class, more often than not when I teach, you're going to see people doing an upward pulse when always, just because that's, and so you get everybody in a downward pulse, and then they're going to be able to find the upward pulse when they need to. They kind of actually do that naturally. I've heard some people say, I try to avoid this, but I mean, I've heard some people say like teaching is telling gradually smaller and smaller lies, right? So that is one of the ones that we kind of put up with. Foundations class.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't say it actually as the way you just said it, which is that it's always, I don't think I said it was always a downward pulse.
Oh, okay.
I think I might have said it as we're doing a downward pulse, it's a downward pulse. And, okay. And I might have stressed it as like, this is our basics. That might seem like it's always, but.
No, that sounds fair. So I think you can see what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to find things that I see in the blues dance that I don't see in Lindy Hop.
Okay.
Have I missed any obvious ones?
Well, I mean, I think some of the differences are more. I think they're a little bit they're semi-superficial. There are differences in the sense that there's a lot of things in Lindy Hop you can get away with that don't work in blues. Because, like, to me, Lindy Hop adds on all these other elements of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for me, your musicality in Lindy Hop is based on, or you're going to play with musicality by playing with either your connection, your footwork, or some move that you're going to do. Whereas in blues, really, it's mostly just connection. So it's like you're distilling that segment of Lindy Hop down and put all your musicality in that. Not that there aren't nifty moves you can do and things like that, but and footwork, I guess. But, like, mostly it's like everything comes down to connection. Mm-hmm. And it's so much slower. So, like, when you speed things up, you can start fudging certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to worry about the journey anymore. Like I talked about in my class, mm-hmm. when you start to speed things up, you can just go boom to boom to the end point. You don't have to worry about the movement in between mm-hmm. because you're just trying to get there. Which is why, like, when I put on that song today in my phone, it got slower. People had a hard time doing something they could do faster.
A lot of the slow dance course was based on that. I think I call that quality of motion. Is that a term that maybe I just made that up?
It involves that in the sense that it's respecting each portion of the motion as opposed to just the, well, anyway, I mean, I talked about it in class. So, like, I think, for example, in Lindy Hop, you can get away with ignoring that. Lindy Hop, you can let go a lot of the pulse, whereas that pulse is crucial to blues, not just because of the music, but also because it helps us lead and follow and play with the connection. Blues, we have to, like, actually slowly move through everything, whereas in Lindy Hop, it's like, you can fudge it. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying you can kind of get away with it and not, you could be a pretty advanced dancer and not be controlling each part of the motion.
You're not going to be the perfect dancer.
You're not going to be fucking amazing. You can't be amazing until you're able to do these kind of things, until you have this body control.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Exactly. It's like, in Lindy Hop, the tempo is this, and so the relative priority to this, when you slow
it down. Yeah, relative priorities is a nice way to put it.
When you slow it right down, some things that were previously marginally important become essential.
Yeah.
And similarly, when you speed the tempo up, some things that are marginally important become essential.
Yeah. So I often actually say in my foundations classes when I'm teaching groups of Lindy Hoppers that everything that I'm teaching them, they can use in their Lindy Hop. The pulse that we teach is actually how they should generally be moving through the dance in the Lindy Hop, but you're moving so fast that it's so easy to overlook that. Mm-hmm. But, like, your triple steps, you should be, I mean, like, the way, what is the basic? It's you drop and then you push off on, when you're changing weight, you drop first and push somewhere new. That drop is just the prelude, right? So when you do your triple steps, you should be doing drop, step, drops it, right? You should be doing the syncopated drop, push, right? That's really hard to do. So a lot of people don't do it. But your triple step will be awesome if you can do that. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't think, I mean, like, another thing I tell people is that the biggest influence, positive influence on my Lindy Hop in the last decade, more than a decade now, I guess, has been blues. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's enormously positive to my Lindy Hop because it teaches me, like, if you can take those, if you practice your connection to musicality enough, and then you're able to do it at, like, Lindy Hop speed, that's fucking great.
I would agree with that. My first blues class was actually from you about 4 years ago.
Was it here?
It was in Cambridge. You came to Cambridge.
Cambridge. That was the second time we were in Cambridge, I think.
Yeah, I think it was. that was just... That was my first taste of a lot of concepts in Lindy Hop.
Blues, where you can do things nice and slow.
Yeah.
And play with them, and you're like, oh, I should maybe do that in my Lindy Hop. Hey, maybe my posture should be athletic in Lindy Hop as well. Guess what? It probably should be. You know.
And a lot of the musicality, I just simply wasn't good enough at Lindy Hop to play with musicality.
One of the things, like, I have a musicality class. Maybe I taught it. But I have a musicality class. I have two musicality classes in blues, which I love dearly, because they're so able to get across this concept that I really believe in terms of musicality, about how you can connect with specific instruments, that is really hard to teach in Lindy Hop. Like, I have, like, variations of it that get parts of it across in Lindy Hop classes, but, like, I almost want, like, because I go and teach Lindy Hop workshops as well, and I almost, when it comes to musicality, I almost want to tell Lindy Hoppers, go learn how to blues dance, then I can teach you musicality and blues, get good at that, and then your Lindy Hop will transform, because then you're like, I fucking get it, as opposed to, like, how am I supposed to be musical with da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But it turns out it's the same exact thing.
Peter Loggins said exactly the same thing, except he used foxtrot or box step or something.
Yeah, I could see that. Except that blues has this nice feature that it's so stretchy that it kind of really compels you. Like it feels so wrong to not be musical in blues.
Or in that. Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, it wasn't about musicality in that case. Yeah, it was a different aspect of it.
He was saying you could learn.
Like, you just said Lindy Hop is a crazy dance to learn first because it can take you years to become a good dancer.
Yeah, so you can learn dance concepts in a simpler dance and then learn. I mean, yeah, I think blues is a great gateway to Lindy Hop. I think it's been somewhat sideswiped by fusion, and that's one of the problems I have with fusion.
These days, there are a lot of dancers who would tell you they were a blues dancer and not a Lindy Hopper, and indeed they don't know how to do Lindy
Hop. Oh, yeah.
And that becomes very interesting. There are also people who learn, you know, their kind of their main dance would be Sirok or...
In Europe. You're not going to see that happen in America.
Okay. And West Coast Swing, maybe.
You might see a little of that.
And they're all doing blues as well. And inevitably, that's going to get these influences in.
Well, yeah, let me give you an example of, and this is back to the history of the contemporary scene, like in San Francisco. So Friday Night Blues was, like I said, Friday Night Blues was the first venue, and it's the oldest running weekly venue in our kind of contemporary blues scene. And and one of the things that was so cool about that is that they had a policy where pretty much anybody could come in and try to teach a class, which sounds haphazard and insane, especially to the European culture of like, no, you have to be basically accredited and before you're teaching. But what was really great about that is it became a breeding ground for teachers. So like for a while, all the best blues teachers came out of San Francisco or maybe Seattle, which followed the same model, but just a few years later. And I mean, that's why so many great teachers came from those two places. And what was cool is it's a great model because like what happens is people try to teach and some of them just fall flat in the face and so you don't bring them back. And other people like they do okay and so you bring them back and they get to kind of cut their teeth on teaching. And that's kind of where I learned how to do a lot of my teaching blues was at Friday Night Blues. Mm-hmm. It wasn't actually the first place I taught blues. That was actually here in Harang. Mm. In 2003, I think.
So was it still called Blues Night in those days?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was Wednesday, it was called Blues
Night. When was it renamed, actually?
I don't know, like 6 or 7 years ago? I'd have to look it up. Okay. Anyways, my point is, like, what we definitely did, like, I started teaching a lot with Haley, and we would, first of all, we learn a lot about how to teach blues, and we do experiments with our classes at Friday Night Blues. Mm-hmm. They were our guinea pigs. And most of my material that I teach today has some kernel of what we taught at Friday Night Blues. Where was I going with this? What were we just talking about? We're talking about. I just sidetracked myself.
It was influences from other dances.
Oh, right, the history. So it used to be everybody like you saw today in class. I said we're all Lindy Hoppers here, right? Okay, good. Our connection for the open, half open, half closed, the ajar position is the middle of the swing out. Everybody do that. Good. Let's move on. I did the same thing in the early days of Friday Night Blues, but we would ask, hey, how many people of you are Lindy Hoppers? And the first few times we taught on Friday Night Blues, every single hand went up. And then all of a sudden, basically the breakdown went like this. They started advertising to the tango scene, because it makes a lot of sense for tango dancers to be drawn to blues.
That's
it.
I should have mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah. So like it went from being 100% Lindy Hoppers to it gradually became like about 50% tango dancers. Mm-hmm. And then it became like one-third tango, one-third Lindy, and one-third new people. Never done any dancing before, maybe some salsa, but generally like had no dance experience. And then it was about 50% new dancers. And these days, I don't even ask the question anymore when I teach in a non-Lindy Hop camp, because like you go to Friday Night Blues and you ask that, and there'll be times when you could ask a class, you know, like 50 people, then you're like, are any Lindy Hoppers? And every single person will be like, what is Lindy Hop? Yeah. Which is kind of awesome. I mean, like, to me, yeah. That means, blues is its own thing now. And I have friends now who are Lindy Hoppers because of blues. Mm. Because I opened a venue that had blues and Lindy Hop at it specifically because I wanted to feed back to Lindy Hop what we had taken in the early days. So.
I noticed in your class that you said that blues was revived. And that word
That was the wrong word. That's fair. Well, I mean, in the same sense that you can revive something that has stopped breathing.
Well, I mean, that's
it's a good
pretty
point,
much
though.
What Lindy Hop... I mean, Lindy Hop is a revival in the sense of reviving something that had basically stopped breathing.
No, no, but that's the thing. Like, Lindy Hop was breathing just really slowly. There were still people who were social Lindy Hopping.
Okay.
There were still a couple places in the world where there was like a handful of people who were still social Lindy Hopping in the 50s and the 60s, 70s. But the social blues scene kind of disappeared. although in some sense there never really was one in the way that we have a social blues.
As you said, it wasn't a social dance.
You know, would you like to dance? We dance. Would you like to dance? That didn't happen in blues music until... That is definitely kind of a contemporary invention. And it also explains the safety that we teach in the dance and the postures and things like that.
And I guess the process of evolving to become a coherent dance is just not possible unless it is a social dance in that sense.
Probably. It'd be interesting to have like a couples show up only and have no rotation. I can't imagine they'd become very good though.
They do. I imagine they'd all end up doing different dances.
Yeah, I mean, when I learned Lindy Hop, I originally would dance with one person. I had a dance partner. We danced together all the time. And then when our partnership ended, I danced a little bit with other people, but when our partnership ended, I started only dancing with other people. I'm like, wow, I suck. Like, I wasted like a year and a half of my life learning how to dance really well with this one person. We perform and we compete and da da da. But actually, that's the story of why I became so set on social dance as opposed to performance competition.
I'm very glad you said that.
Transformative moment for me.
I've always believed that, but I've never actually tried it. So. Yeah.
Tried.
I mean, I've never experienced only dancing with one person.
Don't waste your time. It's a bad idea. Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you want. Some people want to do the competition, performance, show. That's what the dance is to them, you know? And so that's good, you know? Go ahead.
I think we've covered a lot of what I wanted to talk about.
It's interesting that what other things are there that are in blues that are not in Lindy Hop? I think you'll have like a lot more of like the hip motion is a little different in blues. Mm-hmm. There's more of a hip hop, so the hip hop is more to the side as opposed to the hips are more of a twist on the horizontal plane in Lindy Hop.
Sorry, I didn't follow that. You said the hip hop. What's that?
Not hip hop. The hip pop.
Hip pop.
So yeah, so like hip movement. It's interesting to look at like hip movement in different dances. Like in salsa, it tends to be like a vertical. Or in Latin dances, I'm generalizing here, so don't argue with me, let's just move forward. Like, there are examples where this isn't true, but, like, in most Latin dances, the hips kind of tend to move vertically, up, so down, up, down, right?
If that was an aeroplane, you'd call it roll.
Is this roll or yaw?
Roll is like that, yaw is like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, so that's roll, and then you might have, like, yaw, and well, I don't know, this should never happen on an airplane, but like the pop to the side or the inside of the outside, which you'll see in like maybe in a fishtails, you can have that hip pop.
Right, so that's just moving.
That's
sideways.
More of a blues thing.
Yeah.
As well as, and blues maybe will also have, would that be yaw, I guess?
Yaw would be, yaw would be that. So.
Yeah, I guess you have a little bit of that when you talk about like fishtails.
Fishtails, yeah, that would be yaw.
You don't get a lot of yaw in Lindy Hop. Whereas, well, actually, the yaw in Lindy Hop is different. Whereas, yeah, Lindy Hop has the yaw this way. Well, I mean, basically, look. You look at, like, the hips on a twist in Lindy Hop. If the follow is, like, twisting in on the one and two, the most, you know.
Or doing a swivel at the end of the swing.
Maybe you call that a yaw. Swivel, sorry. Yeah. The swivels. The swivels hip movement in Lindy is different from maybe the hip movement we would do in blues.
Yes, certainly true.
And again, it comes from the music. And it's not surprising that, like, again, that got discovered from dancing the music just as it did in the first place.
Okay, here's another thing that you see in blues a lot that you don't see in Lindy Hop, which is disobedient following, as in they just go off and do their own thing.
Hey, you do that to a fast song and swing it, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Is
that, I mean, that could be a product of the tempo, it could be a product of the fact that it's generally done by drunk people, maybe?
Whoa, generally done by drunk people now, or generally was done by drunk people?
I'm thinking now.
No.
No? Okay.
Contemporary blues scene is not generally drunk.
Okay.
There are exceptions to that. There are places where they have, like, I know there's a guy in LA who has blues parties where it's like, get drunk, dance blues. And in fact, like I said, there was this party in Canada at the same time as Lindy Booty. It was called Alcoholidays. So I'm guessing there was a heavy usage of alcohol there.
But right.
Like Lindy Booty, for example, sometimes we had a bar and sometimes we didn't. Like, and sometimes we'd actually tell people and sometimes we wouldn't because, like, I don't even drink. So
right. Okay. Maybe I should explain where I was coming from on that then. A lot of the blues, I'm mostly a Lindy Hopper, so a lot of the blues I do happens at Lindy exchanges, and
by that time you're drunk?
You dress up, you go out, you stay sober, you do lots of Lindy Hop, it approaches midnight, you start drinking, and then the blues starts.
I don't know, maybe we're going to different, Lindy exchanges in the 90s, in the late 90s, people were so hardcore serious about the dance that didn't see a lot of drinking.
Okay.
So by 4 a.m, there was some people were drinking, but there certainly wasn't.
Okay, so let's rule that out then. So the disability.
And I'll tell you this, like, yeah, you go to Friday Night Blues, people, you don't see people like handing. Somebody might take there might be a flask somewhere in the room, but it's not like everybody there is like drinking alcohol. And there's no bar.
Never everybody else.
I would say the vast majority of people at Friday Night Blues on a given Friday night are sober.
So the disobedience,
and I fucking can't stand dancing with drunk people. So the disobedient follows. I mean, I think that's partly a philosophy thing because you have the ability to be disobedient because of the tempo. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's okay. Some people don't. People are standing on different sides of that equation.
I'm certainly using the wrong terminology here as well, but you know.
Well, if you mean. Like, you know what following I mean. Follows have their voice, and there are lots of ways to do that, and that's a pretty complex topic. And I would say that's also true in Lindy Hop as well.
It's a little more obvious in blues,
exactly, because you can be. Maybe that's another way to look at it. You can't swing out if you're doing some of the, like, I'm doing my own little dance on the side that you'll see newer follows do. But in the end, like, when you're talking about that's not the dance, that's the learning of the dance. It's so, like, to me, you look at the advanced dancers, they're learning how to voice their say without, you know, screwing up the control of the dance. Or they might, like, hijack it for a moment, but, like, most of the advanced dancers are, like, figuring out ways to be able to communicate what they want.
Yeah.
Although, actually, one of the things I say in some of my musicality classes is, like, I'm going to say the inflammatory way that'll first, if you play, that'll make people angry for a second until they hear the whole thing I'm saying. Like, I feel like when it comes to musicality, like, I don't think the follow has a choice. I don't think they get to decide things, but now that they're angry with me, they have to listen to the rest of it, hopefully. I don't think the lead has a choice either. Like, if I'm really in a dance and I'm, like, really there and really listening to music and really connecting with a good follow and I'm, like, not thinking about my tax or anything like that, if I'm really, I don't feel like any of my move has a choice. I feel like I'm being totally on remote control from the dance. And so, like, I feel like both the follow, this notion of, like, well, I could have done this move, none of that happens when I really get into it. And that, again, maybe kind of comes to this kind of belief I have in the discovery of the dance. But I can understand how, like, that would be a really hard thing for most people to swallow. So that's their problem. They're missing out.
I guess it'd also be interesting to look at things you see in some of the historical dances that I don't see in blues, which might be just due to my inexperience in
into
blues.
The historical, which historical dance?
Anything that you see any.
All of them.
Anything you see in any of those
King's
dances.
Waltz? What are you?
The slow dances I'm talking about. The things that are to the same or similar music. So
I still don't know what you mean, but
okay,
which
slow
dances? Like, any slow dances throughout time, or the slow dance that they're teaching in the slow dance track? Or slow
so dance? Sugar and Barbara came to this and taught some of the slow dance track last year, for example.
Yeah.
And they taught something which they said was done in the Savoy Ballroom. So this is a social dance.
Yeah.
It's to slow music. And they...
By the way, just because it was done in the Savoy Ballroom does not mean it was a social dance. Did they say it was a social dance? Or did they say it was done in the Savoy Ballroom and you inferred that it was a social dance?
The latter.
Lots of things done in the Savoy Ballroom were not social. Well, what was the dance?
They called it ballroom, which is a very confusing term.
Right. I've interviewed Sugar. Well, they call it ballroom in. It's in
they
spirit
called it
moves.
Ballroom, I think. I'm pretty sure about that.
Well, it's called ballrooming in spirit moves with no G, with an apostrophe.
And it had a basic step which they taught, which was step, tap, step, tap, step, 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 tap. And it had big hip sways so that your hips were acting. It looked a bit like a pendulum underneath your shoulders.
Oh, so maybe it's not the same as ballroom, but... Did it involve spinning your partner and doing these like really fast spins out and spins to wraps?
It did, but they weren't really fast. I mean, it was just step, it was single time step, 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 step. So it was never more than 180 degrees per beat.
Oh, okay. Then I'm talking about a different thing.
Okay.
Got it.
So you see that. Then there is slow drag, of course, which has this kind of drape hold.
Yeah.
Which I don't see modern blues dancers doing.
No. I've seen a couple do it, but it's not done on the social dance floor. Like it's something a couple will do because people don't generally teach it enough for people to really know how to do it comfortably as a social dance.
And in that hold, you see there is basically no lower body leading at all, and this is in the Spirit Moves Blues clip, and then you know it's the one party is doing a mess around with their hips, and the other party is doing something completely different with their hips. And,
right.
And yeah, I don't see that in modern blues dance, but it clearly can be done to this music, and it works.
Wait, mess arounds you don't see done to?
I don't see it being done as an individual variation unled. I guess you see it in open
an
position.
Individual variation. You mean like where one person is doing?
Yeah.
Well, because what you're watching in Spirit Moves are a bunch of Lindy Hoppers messing around to blues music, right? I mean,
Do you believe that? They all.
Well, are just a bunch of.
They are a bunch of Lindy Hoppers, but they all did slow dances.
That's different from blues dancing.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, furthermore. Look, they're amazing dancers, but I will say this, like, watch them Lindy Hop and then watch them blues dance in Spirit Moves. They're all over the place with their connection in Spirit Moves. They're just fucking around.
Yeah, I agree.
Whereas in Lindy Hop, they're super, like, boom, boom, everything's totally tight and together. But when you watch them in Spirit Moves, they're clearly messing around because their connection keeps disappearing and coming back. And, like, you watch the partners and there's moments where they're kind of screwing up and one partner's like, oh, yeah, you know. Like, watch it closely, and you'll see, like, some amateurish connection movements from people who are clearly amazing dancers with incredible body control.
So I see that as deliberate. You don't see that as deliberate. And I think that's
there are moments where they're clearly... we might... I almost want to bring up Spirit Moves now. There are moments where maybe you could argue it's deliberate, but there are moments where it's clearly like there's a surprise factor where it's not what they were planning on happening. Or you mean the fact that it was all kind of like wah-wah was deliberate?
Yeah, I think they're saying that this is what the dance is like.
But why would they show the version of it that isn't perfect? Like, in the same way that, like, when they're showing the Lindy Hop and Spirit Moves, they show the... Like, they don't show, oh, well, you know what? People are fucking up all the time. Their connection gets lost all the time on the Savoy dance floor, so let's do it that way. Like, these are dancers who kind of could have if they were well-versed as blues dancers. But, I mean, like, blues was not something they regularly did. Blues was something that they had a notion of, and they basically put together, like, oh, and we can do this, and, hey, mess around. There, you can just, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm reading it all wrong, but when I watch Spirit Moves, I clearly see a bunch of people are like, they wanted us to do blues, so now we're going to do some blues, and we're great dancers, and we can, like, their body movement is incredible. But the connection and the communication going on stage is a totally different story.
Yeah, it's almost a solo dance, isn't it? And in fact, the
almost what?
Almost a solo dance. In the first half of the clip, they are solo dancing.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's plenty of solo dancing going on. And then they, like, hold each other's hands in solo dance. But I don't think that was... But there are ways to do that that doesn't have kind of the moments of disconnect and surprise that you see in Spirit Moves. Okay. So I don't think it was just we're in a solo dance and hold hands.
Okay, that's really interesting. Thank you. Do you want to say anything about the dancing you see on Slow Drag Night? Is it the same dance you teach, for example?
It is so much closer than it was 10 years ago. There has been, like, I
guess I'm going to ask you two questions then.
I mean, at Harangue, so much of the posture was pelvic, was upright and or pelvis forward.
Mm-hmm.
Which is neither what we do in the contemporary scene, nor the vintage dance, right? Because you can't move. It's just pressing two bodies flat together and then swaying. Mm-hmm. Like, it used to be basically kind of not a make-out night, but, I mean, like, it was the hookup night in such a strong way. In the way that Lindy Hoppers think that blues dancing is, mm-hmm. it actually was. Mm-hmm. And there's the video, you know, have you seen the special, the Harangue educational film? That we made, the black and white educational film about, like, how to get lucky on blues night.
I think I have, but describe it.
It shows, like, different techniques for getting lucky, like licking your follow and things like that.
Oh, God.
Oh, maybe you haven't seen it. Everybody should see it. It's a great video. We made it in response to what was happening on the Harangue dance floor. And what people don't have trouble believing today, and what they don't realize it often, is that all of those things that happened in that video, which are horrific, were happening every single week. like people were coming to me saying, Dave, can you please do something about this? Because I was like the spokesperson for blues, right? And at blues night, people were like basically pressing their partners against them, licking them, blowing in their ear, which cracks me up. I'm like, really? Do you think that's sexy? Blowing in their ear? Like, oh God, that gets me so hot. Like doing all these things that are like in my, just a total violation of space. And people were complaining about it all the time. So we made this video kind of to mock those behaviors. But like we've seen like a huge reduction. I think it used to be that someone would get licked every week. I know this because someone would complain to me every week about someone licking them, which means that a lot of other people were getting licked who weren't talking to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's horrific.
Yeah.
Oh. Peter, but I mean like that's not happening anymore. So that's good.
Peter Luggins mentioned this as well. He said that there are the raunchy versions of the dance and there's the safe versions of the dance. And
well, but those are two different things. There's like the raunchy version that people did 100 years ago. And then there's this raunchy kind of thing that was happening at harangue, which wasn't, like I said, it wasn't vintage or it wasn't contemporary. It was a harangue dance.
So what he said was that switching from a raunchy dance to a safe dance is one of the easiest evolutionary steps. I mean, this is not his words, okay, these are my words, but this is basically what he explained. Is one of the easiest evolutionary steps to make. So
you mean for a dance?
For a dance. So,
interesting, okay.
So if and the raunchy dance cannot be taught in class. You can't do it on a stage if you're back in the 1920s.
Sure.
All sorts of things like that. So the raunchy dance is basically an evolutionary dead end. In order to evolve, it's got to become a safe dance.
Yeah.
And then it can propagate, and then it can become a raunchy dance again. And it will. This is, but yeah.
I mean, that last part is interesting, theorizing, which...
So I shouldn't attribute all of that statement to Peter Loggins, but he said at least that it had gone back and forth many, many times.
I would be curious about that part.
Okay.
When was one of these times that it went back and forth?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting idea. As I've said already, it certainly has. We have made it a social dance, which involved taking the raunchy elements out of it. But that's different than what happened to the Rang Night. That was raunchy in a different way.
Yeah, okay. So the harangue dance, you think, did not evolve out of contemporary blues then? That evolved.
So yeah, harangue is an entirely different thing where they basically put on slow jazz and let people press their bodies together.
So that's an independent, almost an independent. Well, I guess
it's like it's a different dance. Why I told people, I'm like,
it's not going to be independent, is it?
Huh?
It's not going to be independent, though, is it? Because people come to it from all over the world. But
yeah, but I mean, it to me, like, it comes out of the harangue blues, which doesn't quite exist as much anymore. Like no. I said, mostly you go in there, and I'm seeing a lot of the kind of elements that we're teaching in blues. I see that happening.
I agree with you.
Which I didn't 10 years ago. 10 years ago, there'd be, like, six of us up there going, oh, this is painful. I think, like, the bodies pressed together, the upright bodies pressed together, and, you know, basically, I mean, there's no grind in that. Mm-hmm. It's just two bodies pressed together, swaying, and then, like maybe, like, getting into each other's space, like, kissing or whatever. Or maybe not always. Not everybody up there was, like, making out and licking each other. I don't mean to imply that. But that was happening up there. And that kind of a thing comes out of the fact that you take some Lindy Hoppers, you put on slow jazz, where it's not blues, so it doesn't have the pulse and whatever, so they can lose the athletic... They didn't have an athletic posture yet, and they're Lindy Hop, so they're not going to have an athletic posture when you play it slow. They're going to just push you. And they're at a camp where maybe it would be nice to hook up with someone. So that's like the romantic, in quotes, night. So,
and the lights are low, and they block out the windows to keep it dark all through the dance.
Exactly.
And, one of the things I found most interesting about your class was that you described the close hold, and you said this is a class environment. It doesn't mean anything. You know how to say no, so let's give it a go. Let's do this close hold.
Yeah.
And... my experience and also that of my friend that I talked to was that nobody did that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I look around and I see, I would say in this class, about half the people were doing a close embrace and the other half were still in open. Sometimes I push it and sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're missing out if they don't want to do it, but you never know with culture. Like in some, I'll go to some cities and they're like, no problem. You know, in other cities, like no matter what you say, they'll never get into a close embrace in a foundations class. Here at harangue, we have so many different cultures in the room. I'm like, well, I'm going to kind of try to sell it, and hopefully some of them will get to experience it. But
Could you?
It's funny because part of the problem is the fact that so many people still haven't fully gotten comfortable with this athletic posture, that they're still having their upper body upright.
Yeah, you corrected me several times.
Told them that was dancing. You know, even though it's funny, because when you finally learn this athletic posture, like, this makes sense. This actually feels right. And that other thing is ridiculous. Having said that, they're in, like, their learning mode, and their back is coming upright. And that means when they get into close posture, then all of a sudden they're grinding with somebody. And that's not what we're trying to get. I mean, like, obviously, like, there aren't a lot of people out there. You're like, hey, can you randomly just grind with the next 20 people on this line? Like, very few people would say yes to that.
There are other ways of getting a close embrace without grinding. I mean, they work it out in tango. They work it out in Balboa. I believe those are different.
But the posture in tango is much easier to pull off than the posture. Wow, that's going to get me crucified by tango dance. Tango is a very complex, deep, and very hard to do to hands. 6 months learning tango, which means I'm still a total beginner. Tango is amazing. Having said that, to me, as a dancer trying to learn postures, the posture in tango is easier to learn than the posture in blues. As a dance posture, I mean, it's like everybody knows how to do the posture in blues. They just don't know how to hold on to it when they start doing this dance.
You're probably one of the few people who can. Sorry,
I'm just checking to see why my baby hasn't called me. Go on.
You're probably one.
That sounds like a blues song right there. We should start singing. I'm probably one of the few people
who can tell me about how blues is distributed around the world. Who does it, and is it the same everywhere?
No, it's not. It's starting. So, like, pretty much. Blues is biggest in the English-speaking countries, and that has a lot to do with, one, the fact that it comes from that culture, or English-speaking cultures are going to be more like American culture, which is also an English-speaking culture, for a variety of reasons. But also because people who speak English tend to be a little more audacious than people who don't, which is why, like, we see probably the best blues scenes are in Australia, in London and in America, mostly on the West Coast, but it's spread all across the country now. Or at least the best ones are in the West, whatever, all across America. And that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, I mean, like, I've spent much of the last 6 or 7 years traveling around Europe trying to plant blues everywhere. In some ways, before it was entirely ready, just because I wanted to start planting the seeds, you know, like a Johnny Appleseed of blues, I guess. And one of the problems we often ran into is the fact that in European culture, Europeans are much less likely to start teaching something until they know that they're an expert at it. Whereas, like, Americans, it's like they learn blues and then they'll go teach an advanced class in blues the next week, right? Like, it's just, the nature. As it turns out, And that has its problems. But as it turns out, when you don't have any other options, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, Friday Night Blues was, like, there was really very few, there was no one there really to teach except just the other dancers who had been doing this the most and had, you know, so you start getting them to teach and eventually some of them learn how to teach and then the dance gets formalized. I mean, the other option is that you don't have Friday Night Blues.
I know that there is plenty of blues being danced in Barcelona.
Yeah.
France.
I don't know, plenty is strong. Look, there is blues in Europe. Mm-hmm. The biggest scenes are generally the English-speaking countries. Although I think maybe Seoul might be finally catching along.
You mentioned Russia in your lesson.
Oh, yeah, there isn't much blues in Russia. But, you know, I mean, all of these, a lot of them have small scenes. Like, to me, what a scene is really healthy when it's got one or two weekly venues and occasional parties, maybe, or just more weekly venues. And that's a hard thing to find in most of Europe. It's starting to happen now.
I found a lot of the Finnish dancers were pretty good at blues.
Well, but a lot of that just comes from the fact that they take some workshops and they already know how Lindy Hop, so they can learn blues quickly and then they go to events. But I don't think there's a strong blues scene in Finland. They might have some blues there. But, like, what we found is we would travel places and we do blues. We teach Lindy Hoppers blues. It was almost all Lindy Hoppers to start with. And then they'd be like, this is great. I love this dance. Where can I do it? I'm like, start a venue. And they always said the same thing in Europe, which is who would teach at it. And I'd be like, you can teach at it. You'll screw up and it'll be great. Do it. Like, you and the ones that have the audacity to do that now have scenes. like the Czech Republic, right? It has a tiny little blues scene because, well, partly because I kept going back there because I love Prague, but also because they like were like, fine, we're going to just give it a try. Mm-hmm. But Americans and English-speaking countries are far more comfortable teaching something that they've only just learned. You know, it's an in fact, there's a really great joke which makes the most sense in America dance, which is like, how will I know if I'm ready to start teaching dance? And the answer is, don't worry, you'll be teaching long before then. Right? Which is definitely true in the US.
Can you describe some of the ways these dance, the dance varies from place to place? I guess other than the ones we've already talked about, like fusion and things.
I think it only varies in the sense that different regions will have different things that are hard for them to learn, so they'll get stuck in certain ruts of... But, I mean, basically, people are all kind of... I mean, like, well, maybe there are scenes that I don't know. Like I said, I've spent, what, 6 years now or so traveling around teaching blues, and I've taught blues in most of the countries in Europe, right? So they're doing a blues that I believe in. So I hope I'm doing a good job, because I could be spreading misinformation everywhere. I hope that's not the case. So, like, everywhere I go, they're doing this variation of what is being done in America, like, that I can see from all my travels across America. You'll see very slight regional variations just because, like, in one city, they'll have trouble with this part of the pulse. So they'll all do kind of a pulse that looks like, you know, and you, unless you go back enough times that you can get them all on the right track. That's just how things are going to be.
That's just how it's going to convert.
But people are basically doing... The places I've gone to, hopefully they're doing...
Yeah.
The variation, you know, of blues, which is what we're teaching.
I had another question lined up and I've forgotten it.
Different variations. Travel or teaching in different countries or...
Anyway, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. Should we stop?
Yeah, let's call it.
Thank you very much.
Let's go head out to the dance. Yeah, thanks. Cool. Let me know what you do with this. Send me a message so I can find out when people are going to start sending me angry messages.